extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer. It is a beautiful Monday, and by beautiful, I mean oppressively hot and humid. David Goss is here. How are you sweating yet, Dave? Yes or no?
How am I? Yes or no? I don't know what
are
that
you?
Means.
I mean, just a general yes or no question.
Yeah, it's like, I think, real feel of 107 inside my apartment. But that's only with the wind blowing, which it's not right now. So it's maybe 114, 115. So I feel like Gareth Bale and Giorgio Chiellini, who's like, no one told me it'd be hot.
Could they survive podcasting in David Goss's apartment? TBD. As for how you sweat, I think the logistics of that were all covered on. So Kaelin Carr is here. Matt Doyle is here. We've got a big show coming up.
We're rocking up Heineken. I'm wearing a long sleeve.
Whoa.
It should just speak to my mentality. Just so you know.
So, Kaelin, which fashion did that long sleeve come from?
Which fashion shoot?
Yeah. I know that you're normally
Asbury Park FC.
Coming off a weekend, I know you probably had a couple of different fashion events that you were attending.
Yeah. No, not so much this weekend.
I forgot.
I went to a tennis club fashion shoot.
I forgot about the fashion shoot I was a part of.
Which fashion shoot are we talking about here?
That
one? Yeah, you even got the sleeveless Chivas warm-up out. Guadalajara, like OG goats, not the RIP goats.
Fun fact, I played a friendly for Chivas USA while I was under contract with Chicago. I don't know if they knew about it or how that all got arranged. But I drew a penalty against Chivas Guadalajara in the Estadio Jalisco, and it was an incredible trip. Afterwards, I think Martin Vasquez was the coach. He was like, make sure you go out and have a night out with the guys. And it was one of the best nights ever, maybe. It was super
That's
fun.
Just good leadership from Martin.
It is.
He just knows what a young guy needs in that moment. Draw a PK. Hey, get after it.
Well, also, I wasn't one of his players, so he's just like, go party, man.
Get it up. No worries. Like, I'm not going to see you tomorrow morning. You'll be all good. Show up rugged if you need to. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I mean, you know the deal. There were 14 games this weekend, all 28 teams in action. We are going to try to run our way all the way through it without going over 2 hours. Doyle suggested 5 minutes a game, but... Yeah, I know my team, and I just don't think we're capable of that.
Be a lot of stoppage time.
To be perfectly honest, like, I just didn't, you know, it sounded great in theory, but, you know, you got to know your players. And I don't think we got that. So let's start and get into it, and we'll try to do our best to keep things brief and not to make people yawn and be bored during the LAFC inevitable bail segment. Best thing you saw in week 21, Doyle, get us started.
Tati Castellanos' farewell. And we're pretty sure it's a farewell. It's not confirmed yet, though. Reports came out this morning that he's going to be bought by Man City, essentially. And now City Football Group owns Man City and NYCFC. But they also own Girona, which just won promotion to La Liga. And the plan is going to be for Man City to buy him and then loan him out for at least a year. It seems to be heading this direction because none of the South American teams nor the interested European teams, Feyenoord was one of them, were going to hit the valuation that City Football Group had slapped on him. I kind of like this for Tati. He gets to go to one of the best leagues, second best league in the world at this point, probably, and prove himself. And I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to absolutely kill it there. And I think he is going to end up doing kind of like a Jack Harrison thing where he plays his way into a permanent transfer for big money on a legit team somewhere in the Big Five rather than like a yo-yo team, which is what Girona is.
So
probably
Doyle,
not a lone army guy, but we hope not at least.
NYCFC, Man City, Girona, three CFG teams. Can you name me the name of two more CFG owned football clubs in the world?
Isn't the one that Tata used to play out?
Yes.
And play out.
Can
in
you name
Uruguay?
It?
Torque?
Torque.
Okay, yeah. Montevideo City Torque. But I'll take that one. Can you do one more for me?
And then
there's another city here. You got another city you could go to.
Is it Melbourne City?
Let's go.
There you go. Good job. Yeah. They also own Mumbai City. You could have gone Mumbai.
Yeah, they just did
a
Google search. They were like, what are the names of cities that have football clubs we can call city? If it starts with M, we're money. We're good to go. So, yeah, Tati's goodbye, we think. All of the signs are that he had a lot of hugs to go around. Whether it be
and a great goal. I mean, yeah, a great goal to win the Hudson River Derby. This is the first time that NYCFC won a game in Red Bull Arena against the Red Bulls. They have won other games in Red Bull Arena. But the first time they won a game in Red Bull Arena against the Red Bulls in 5 years. So to score the only goal in that, have a pretty emotional farewell. It was a fitting sort of end to what we think, an end to his time in MLS.
I believe I saw a stat rolling around on Twitter. I didn't check it. If it's wrong, sue me. That Tati is basically the leader in tied for the lead in goals scored at Red Bull Arena since the start of 2021. Of course, NYCFC has played a few games in Harrison with 4 goals, and that's equal to as well as Patrick Kamala. So that'll tell you something about where the Red Bulls are at as well. Kalen, best thing you saw week 21.
I'm gonna go with Real Salt Lake and go with Justin Miram not getting into the 50-50 club. I think 51 assists now, 50 goals. And that is a rarefied air in MLS. So I remember seeing Justin come through just as a young guy with Columbus and being like, oh, this guy's got a ton of talent. We've now seen it on a bunch of different clubs across the league. And so, but yeah, I think that sort of that sort of category is really special because it's like it shows you're a creator, you're a goal scorer, you have that sort of balance, which is rare. We often see one or the other. And so to see him get into that 50-50 club, I think of guys like Diego Valeri, guys like that have done it before. That is pretty special and should be celebrated. So shout out to Justin.
Interesting thing too with Justin is that he's a 5 goals, 3 assists in his first 3 professional seasons guy. Like he's sort of a worked his way into it sort of player. So it didn't just come from him from the start. So 50 and 51, congratulations to Miram. Dave, what about you?
I will go to obviously going to focus everything I say on heat and weather over the next hour
and
a half.
Climate.
It's all about climate for me. And I'll talk about Alejandro Pozuelo, who my first reaction when he came on the field for Inter Miami for the first time ever was, is he wearing long sleeve shirt in July? And then it's like, oh, I guess people have their feels that, you know, you get used to stuff. People like to operate in certain ways. Halftime, shirt gone, 3-goal comeback. Are you kidding me? Is there any better tactical move this weekend than Alejandro Pozuelo going from long to short sleeves? So that's the best thing I saw.
I think it's fair. You signed for David Beckham's club and you just have a feeling that you need to go long sleeve no matter the circumstances. Big comeback for Inter Miami. They're hovering around that playoff line, but they were down 2-0 to Charlotte at home. They've been pretty good at home. 6 wins there. This was one of the 6 that came back and got a goal late on. Bryce Duke, the guy that Pozuelo seems to maybe be replacing, with a nice little pass to Emerson Rodriguez for the game-winning goal. And my guy on the Golden Boot team, Gonzalo Higuain, with an absolute worldie. 2 goals in 2 games. We're coming for you, Doyle. Tati's gone. I got a chance here. We're going to redraft at some point. I don't know if Kalen's been groaning about that in the group chat or just sort of playing along with me, but maybe closer to the All-Star game, we'll get a little bit of a summer transfer window draft going on. The best thing I saw, very clearly, Austin FC celebrating Copa Tejas in the parking lot in Frisco. A lot of parking lots in Frisco, but this was a special one. There's a long story as why they didn't do it in the stadium. It was an agreement between the supporters. Basically, hey, it's probably not good for the visitors to have a big celebration in our stadium. I guess for safety reasons, they thought. Anyway, Austin FC waited around. The players were literally doing the worm on the field, waiting for the Copa Tejas to be produced. And then they met up with the supporters in the parking lot. It's dark. You've got the like neon green, I don't know, what is it they throw in their bass drums? You've got a full band out there. You have a huge visiting section, all these buses that came north on 35. And Austin FC absolutely getting down. 8 points from 4 games, 2 wins, 2 draws. Dallas had a chance to do it at home. They didn't. Losers overall in the Copa Tejas. But, you know, I guess, you know, look, a draw at home against your rival to lose Copa Tejas, technically I would classify as a loss, even though the result didn't go that way. But hey, Austin FC out here 1 point shy of LAFC in the Supporters Shield standings, having celebrations, winning trophies. You can argue amongst yourselves out there as to how much that matters, but wait, for Austin, it mattered.
Are you implying that this is a bonus trophy, Weeby?
I didn't say that, but now I'm coming around to it. You know, that sounds like sound logic to me, to be honest. All right, let's start with our top story of week 21. No, it's not Gareth Bale. It could be Cucho, but he'll come next. It's got to be Tati in the Hudson River Derby. 1-0 NYCFC. But yeah, it's Tati's goal, and it's the pass from Santi Rodriguez, who's turned into an absolute, you know, chance creation machine among the league leaders in assists. We saw that some in the playoffs last year. We talked through it. It seems like he's gone. So let's kind of dig into first the move, Girona for Tati and the Jack Harrison treatment. Remember, Jack Harrison purchased by City Football Group, then immediately loaned to Leeds, and then that all worked out. Well, not to Leeds. He went somewhere else. I can't remember right now. But
I think.
Yeah, yeah, and he ended up at where Zach Steffen is. But he ended up back at Leeds, and that worked out well for him and ended up being a big transfer. What do we think about Girona, Kalen, as a destination for Tati? Is that disappointing? Is it fitting? Is it a good opportunity for him? What's it all mean?
I don't know. I might kick this over to Doyle. I don't know too much about that club situation. And it seems the one thing I will say is I just couldn't understand for the life of me why there aren't more bidders outside of City Football Group. I understand there were a few from South America, but didn't seem like, from what I saw, the valuation was off. Like, they were asking for way more than he was worth. So, but I don't know. What do you think, Doyle?
I mean, my understanding is that they wanted 15 and they were getting bids around 12, 12 and a half. So it wasn't a huge difference, but I guess it was enough for City to say, you know what, we can take care of this ourselves. If he plays well in La Liga, then we'll get our 15. We might even get more than that. As for Girona, like I said at the top, they're a yo-yo club. They go up, stay up for a year, maybe two. They go back down. They're mostly in the Segunda Liga, though, with City starting to put more of their lone army talent in there. Not that lone armies are as big as they used to be with the new rules. They have a chance to maybe establish themselves as like a mid-table La Liga club. So in a way, it's kind of disappointing because it would have been dope to see, I don't know. There was some talk about Leeds. Like, if Leeds had come up with the money, and like Tati would have been a perfect fit there, and it would have been so easy to just sort of like transfer allegiances and, you know, kind of, because I'll be rooting for him the same way I rooted for Miguel Almiron. But it didn't work out that way. I think it's okay. He's where he wants to be. He's in Europe in a big five league. He's going to get a chance to prove himself. And if he plays like he did for NYCFC the past year and a half, he will prove himself. And this, like, his development into like one of the league's most lethal goal scorers is absurd. He had 23 goals in his first 86 games for NYCFC. He's had 36 goals in his last 47. Like, a part of it obviously is, you know, playing under Ronnie Dyla for a while really helped him. He got to play more as a center forward. Part of it is just maturation. Like, he just is, you know, entering his prime and is an absolute killer out there. Replacing him for NYCFC is going to be really, really rough. I assume that Eber is going to get the first shot at it. It's Dave, since you're the Eber guy on this podcast, you're smiling.
Luis Suarez. No. Just for the fun.
Yeah, Eber's in there. Obviously, Talis Magno will get looks as well, I think, in that spot. Pereira is an option as well. Thiago Andrade. I mean, they're loaded, right? Santi Rodriguez has the assist in this game. Max Morales has played phenomenally. Like, they just have a million options. Just last piece on the Girona part, I think it's a little upsetting to me because Tati's, as Doyle said, one of the best players we've seen in this league. He's 22 years old, 23. Sorry, obviously I never get ages right. He's 23. He's a Golden Boot winner, and that may not even be his best attribute. That's how talented he is. And so it's been confusing to me this entire time that, you know, as Doyle mentioned, teams are close, but those numbers are becoming somewhat attainable for MLS players, and Tati's better than all those players in the same league. He's an Argentine, you know, obviously not full international, played a little with the youth team, but it seems like his profile does fit what NYCFC and CFG is asking for. I have very little doubt he's going to go to Girona, dominate, and then get the move, whatever it is. And Christian Stuani, as everyone knows, the Uruguayan international, he's been the one constant at Girona over these years. And so he'll start up top with him, which I think is a perfect pairing for Tati to find the game and do what he does best. But on the NYCFC front, we've probably never seen a team that has a player of this quality. And you can honestly say they won't need to go out and replace him. And they will still be an MLS Cup contenders, if not favorites, coming out of this season. And it just goes to the depth they had. Eber was the starter. He got hurt. Tati took over. Eber has shown, I think, over the last few weeks, flashes that he is ready to get back to that level. And Talis Magno combines creativity and entertainment with quality and production, probably as well as anyone we've ever seen in MLS. And he's still just a young player who's getting better and better.
I mean, Joel, as well as anyone we've ever seen at that age.
Yeah, fair. Right. Yeah. He's not a go-to carry the team player, but
he's not Carlos Vela 2019 or.
But he tries stuff that Vela wouldn't have tried.
He's fantastic. I think he might already be the best winger in MLS. We should spend a minute here on the Red Bulls. Like
We'll get to him. Don't worry. We'll get to him. Can I just say that
we're doing 5 minutes a game?
We're not. I told you. I know my squad, and I know myself. And I'm not putting out a team that's conservative. I'm not coming in here saying we're only giving five. I want to throw out Nahuel Bustos as a name to think about when it comes to Tati and Girona. He's a Man City loan guy, 24-year-old Argentine, who was there the last year and said goodbye. So this seems like a pretty direct replacement for him, and it's a pathway that Man City knows well. I'm just happy to see him in Europe. I didn't want to see him go back to South America. I thought for NYCFC's developmental path and all these young players alike, Tyus Magno coming through, you want to see him make that next jump, and hopefully Tati was the first. And I think that's why we all wanted to see him sold for the 15 mil or whatever it was, and have it just be sort of done, money in the bank, you know, have some sort of like precedent established, and maybe that will come. It happened for Jack Harrison, and we know that Tati is a pretty determined guy. Let's not just, you know, walk away from Tati too quick, though. We have some questions. Ethan Moore asks, what's your favorite memory of Tati if this was his last game? Again, it certainly seems to be his last game. I can start on that one. I think Eastern Conference semifinals last year, pure Tati essence of just desire, 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 wins the race to the back post, that header to put NYCFC up 2-1 in the 108th minute. And then literally 2.5 minutes later, insane tackle to get his second yellow card to be sent off, to then be suspended against Philly, but then to come back and be a stud in the MLS Cup final as well as NYCFC make history and win their first MLS Cup. So that 5 minute span, for me, is my favorite memory of Tati. Anybody else have one that stands out? A goal, a moment, maybe with his mom? That would be a good one. Remember, didn't he win the Golden Boot, and then his mom came and surprised him, and he was crying in the locker room? Like, that was a super human moment.
I think that was on decision day, right? Or what?
I think it was afterwards. It was at training.
Was it?
I think, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
They had her bring it for him.
The decision day one for me stood out like from last year. I think they got a red card. I think Gedeon Zalalem got a red card during that match. It was the last game of the season. And I remember thinking like, you know, this is kind of, well, you know, they were fighting for their playoff position and how it was all going to go. And I thought they were going to kind of tank. And they fought back and scrapped, and he scored an important goal in that one. And for me, I just felt like towards the end of last year, he flipped a switch as a leader on the team. Not so much just with like finding goals, but finding important goals in the right moments. And he continued that through the playoffs. And that's sort of the part that I think has switched for him over time in his development of like, yes, his strike rate has improved for sure, his chances, but I think in the bigger moments as the seasons have gone on, or as we saw again in the bigger matches, like over the weekend against New York, they haven't won there in 5 years. Like, he seemed to always be able to find that extra gear, find that moment, even in matches where he wasn't before. It was maybe he needed to be a volume chance creator or a chance fit where he'd get like five chances and finish one. And now suddenly it was looking at two chances, three chances. He's going to get one. He's going to get two. And in the big moments that matter, he did it all the way to MLS Cup. So, but that decision day one kind of stood out to me. I don't know why, just as far as like pushing them towards the back half. And, you know, shout out to Sean Johnson for making all those saves and the penalty kick shootouts as well. But, and the whole team. But I think Tati's, that's the piece that makes me a little worried, probably a little more cautious than Goss is around like projecting forward towards finding those meaningful moments. Yes, they have a ton of Magic players, but Santi sometimes can be a little bit, he can be really on and then can kind of disappear. Talis Magno as well. They've got a number of weapons to help balance it out. But for me, it was Tati always that was like in the big moments. He was the guy that could find an important goal, which still for me is what wins you in the playoffs or towards MLS Cup.
The one that stands out to me, similar to Kalen's obviously a little earlier, though, was actually at MLS's back. If you remember, Toronto had gone to MLS Cup in 2019. Eber got hurt at the end of the year, and then they played TFC in the first round of the knockouts of MLS's back, and he scored a really good goal, and he was pressing all over the place, and it kind of felt like a changing moment of, like, this is Tati's team, one, but two, like, he can be the guy to elevate them from the story, which was best team in the regular season for the last 3 years combined, but falls apart in the playoffs, and they had done that the year before against Toronto, and so I just, for some reason, that game always stood out to me of coming back from that playoffs and then going into that game. And it was one of the first knockout games of that as well. So we didn't really know what the whole thing would look like. And I just remember him being himself, which was always a threat, constant pressing all over the place. I don't know, maybe Omar Gonzalez was playing in that game or not. AKA, I think Tati just eviscerated him over the course of that game. And he scored a really, really clean finish at one point where it was like, here comes the other half of his game. And since then, as Doyle laid the numbers out, he sort of hasn't stopped.
Doyle, here's something for you. Producer Phil, who we know and love, editor on Instant Replay and many other things over at MLS. Where would Tati fall in the best MLS exports power rankings? And then Coach Joe, when it's all said and done, who will have the better European career, Tati or Miguel Almiron?
I think for the second one, I'm going to go with Tati. And I think Almiron's a spectacular player. He just went to the wrong team in the wrong league. I think if Almiron had gone to a team that better fits his skill set, he would have had a spectacular career. That didn't really happen for him. What City Football Group have shown is the ability to be patient and make sure that when they sell these guys on, they get them to clubs where they can perform. And that's why they're able to sell these guys for more and more and more over the course of years. Where he stands as an MLS export, you know, the top tier. Well, Alfonso Davies is in a tier by himself, and then the tier down from that is guys like Tim Howard, Tyler Adams, you know, on down the list, DeMarcus Beasley,
Clint Carlos.
Like, yeah, like I think he's going to end up in that tier. I think he's going to end up being about that good.
Okay, Justin Egan, and we'll end on Tati here. Should I crawl into the fetal position because Tati's gone, or is NYCFC going to be okay? We know Dave's take on this.
I mean, I'll answer, like, they're going to miss him badly, and it's going to exacerbate this really weird problem that's cropped up for them since Nick Cushing took over. Like, we saw it last weekend against New England. We saw it throughout the Dallas game. We saw it like in a number of games before that. It didn't happen against the Red Bulls because the Red Bulls don't possess, right? They don't use the ball. So that actually played to NYCFC's current defensive strength. But the issue with NYCFC is that they're really passive in their defensive half under Nick Cushing. They let you knock the ball around. They don't get pressure to the ball like they were doing under Ronnie Dyla. I'm actually more concerned, like, this game against the Red Bulls, it's a really good win. By every measure, it's a really good win. It should not overshadow the current weakness that this team has shown for the past 2 months. And the numbers, like, across the board in terms of getting pressure to the ball have dropped since Nick Cushing took over. And he didn't really address it in the post game, but he did say something to the effect that, like, well, Tati was a real trooper. He bought into all the adjustments that I made. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, why did you make those adjustments? Like, why? Like, what is the point of them if it's making you easier to play against? And right now, if I was an NYCFC fan, I would be more concerned about that than I would be about replacing Tati. Because I think between Eber and now whatever amount of money and open DP slot they have, they can go out on the market and maybe find the next Tati. So I don't think anybody should go fetal, but there's reason for concern in the Bronx, even though, you know, they're up at the very top of the Eastern Conference.
Come on, Luis Suarez, man. Short term.
I mean, he would be a great fit.
Just go short term. I mean, you have Maxi in a window that's not forever either. I mean, go win another championship.
18-month contract. See if that happens.
What about what they've done over the last 4 years makes you think they're going to go short term and sign Luis
Suarez? Well, because they have all those guys. They have like a squad of dudes that he can amplify.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
I'm just trying to speak it into reality.
Yeah. I'm looking at a guy in a little box in an NYCFC jersey, and I'm just just talking back.
Yeah. No. I feel you. How about concerns for the Red Bulls, and we'll move on, Dave.
The concerns are for the individual, whoever it is up top as a goal scorer. But I thought in general it was a good performance from them. I thought they created a bunch of chances early on. I thought that they had the opportunities to put themselves ahead. Luquinhos looked good again. I thought Casares was awesome. Amaya was really good as well. And then they get beat by a moment of brilliance. That's a perfect ball over the top, and it's an unbelievable finish from Tati. And I don't know that most teams in this league are capable of that. So for the Red Bulls, I wouldn't say it's a big panic moment of any sort. And
it's a little panic moment.
I mean, if John Tolkien takes the two half chances better in that first half, they're up 1-0.
If your left back can just start banging in goals, then everything is fine.
I mean, he's a borderline U.S. national team player who's maybe a center mid. So,
I mean, he's good. Don't get me wrong, but like this is a team that needs goals, and Gerhard Schruber is pretty much done with Patrick Lamala based upon what we've seen over the past month. That's one, and two is, it's not a coincidence that the high-pressing team that runs themselves to death every single game started fading at the 60th minute. And Struber didn't make subs until he brought on Tom Barlow. But other than Tom Barlow, he didn't make his subs until, like, the 77th. Like, this is a pattern that we've seen with other pressing teams. I think we saw a bit with the Red Bulls last year, though they did turn it around in September. Like, I don't know. Like, this one worried me from a Red Bulls perspective, because they don't have the ability to brute force a win. They don't have a guy who could just go out there and overwhelm you with quality and get a goal.
But hasn't Luquinhos and Luis Morgan been that for a ton of this year?
No, they're good players, but they're getting their goals within the scope of Red Bull's overall system, right? They're not, creating this crazy goal out of absolutely nothing or just like absolutely dominating a guy in the box. It's coming from the Red Bull system. Well, if the summer and the lack of rotation and the shortened depth chart means the system's not as effective, that's a worry.
Can we check the time here? Is that 5 minutes over under? Where are we at on that? Yeah, okay. Crew Cincinnati, let's just talk Cucho here. A ton of questions about that, but Dave hit the group chat this week and said, if someone does the research on the 7 players in MLS history to score in their first 3 appearances, I'll do the guessing tomorrow. So it's time to do the guessing. Doyle said he had the list. Let's get the guessing. I will start us off. Charlie Davies.
You got it. I was hoping nobody would get that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Charlie, I threw the question at Charlie in a pre-show meeting for MLS After Dark last night, and he said, I did that. And I said, don't say that on air. Don't say that anywhere else. I'm taking it off the jump. So we took Charlie Davies off the board. Obviously, Cucho is one of the other ones. So we have 5 players left. Dave, first four who was games? On your mind? First to score in their first 3 games. For three appearances.
You have 6 players left. You have 6 players left.
So Cucho was
eight
part of
the total.
Okay, got it. Got it. Now I'm understanding
better. How many of them are DPs?
Oh, jeez.
Can I throw one out? And we're just guessing here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I throw Pipa Higuain out there?
He was not.
Dang.
He was I'm going so to guess Luciano Emilio, another DC player.
Ooh, nope. Hell yeah.
Nope.
Okay. No, not Luciano Emilio.
Javinka?
First 3 appearances.
Nope.
Jermaine Defoe?
Nope.
Zlatan. Marco Devaio. Marco Devaio.
Nope.
Zlatan.
Nope. There is one recent DP, very reminiscent of Cucho, like the same type of player, same
Joseph
type of
Martinez,
entity. Not Joseph,
same type,
but
of player and
same Gustavo same Ball? Build. No,
I know, but I just remember him
me. How is he like Cucho?
Oh boy!
All right, so I'm going to skip that one. We'll come back to it real quick. I will say that there are. Fontas. There are 2 former MLS MVPs on this list.
Robbie Keane?
Nope.
Mike McGee?
Rui Diaz.
Nope.
Landon Donovan with San Jose?
Nope. But right era.
Carlos Ruiz.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Nice.
All right.
Finally.
All right. So one more MVP.
This is poor. This is
yeah. So there's another MVP in here. This has been poor. Like, Christian Gomez.
Era.
Christian Gomez.
No.
Jaime Moreno?
No.
Preki?
No. 2001 MLS MVP.
Alex Pineda Chacon, that would have been...
You got it. He's one of two Hondurans on the list. He's the other Honduran.
Amado Guevara?
No.
Carlos Pavon?
No.
Carlo Coastley? I got you.
Jerry Bankston.
Yeah. Still playing in MLS.
Kyoto.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm good at this game with a lot of guesses. A lot of scattershot.
The others are Brian Fernandez. That was the DP who reminds me of Cucho.
Yeah, yeah.
Octavio Rivero.
Amazing.
Vancouver.
Whoa.
And then the last one, the one that, like, literally a name I had completely forgotten about. Like, I could not picture this player. I had to go back and dig out video. Diego Chavez from the Chicago Fire in 2011. He scored 3 goals in his first 3 games, Diego 4 Chavez. In his first 5.
Dude, I was on the team in 2011.
What are you? Give us a specific Diego Chavez memory.
I've got to Google him. I have no idea.
20 games. He went scoreless for 20 games. Scored in his final game. Never played in MLS again.
Whoa!
I like. He barely has a Wikipedia page. This
guy is Diego. What's up, Diego?
Anyway, Crew 2, Cincinnati, nothing. Lucho Acosta still suspended. Pat Noonan not happy about that. It comes down to not just the headbutt. I believe there were some issues that Lucho had with the referees as well in that match, and I think that's where some of that suspension comes from, the additional suspension. It's Cucho's first start, same result. He is the first ever, by the way, and we have all these that scored in their first 3 appearances, but he's the first ever to score 4 goals in under 90 minutes of game action to start his career in MLS. That is insane. Nice little flick header at the near post. Good service from Lucas Zelarayan. A lot of mail on this one. Sam Whitaker, is Cucho Hernandez on track to be the best goal scorer in MLS once Tati leaves? If so, how do small market teams replicate the Columbus recruitment strategy to attract similarly talented players? Faith, which is a Cincinnati fan, she says, how long do you think Cucho will stay in MLS? Please say not long. And then Brahma Ghosh says, is this finally the Crew team we all thought was going to dominate last year? They have a ton of home games remaining. I believe the most home games in MLS. Quality of Cucho, best goal scorer in MLS. How long will he stay? I mean, people are getting way ahead of themselves, but this is as good as it could possibly get. Kaylin, it's, you know, it's Diego Chavez-esque, you might say.
I mean, hoping not
for the drought.
I don't see why you would be concerned about him leaving. This feels like the type of signing that once you come, you've made your decision, you understand exactly, you know, what you're walking into, and you're now going to likely have this player for a while. I just think, you know, when you come into a place like Columbus, I think he just got sold on the project. And that was the exciting part, was to say, we've seen so many of the other times where now we're like, hey, Tati is going abroad. How does that look? What does that look like in Europe? Or what does it look like for Miguel Almirón? Imagine him in Europe. What would that be like? Or you look at a lot of other young players in MLS. This is kind of the opposite, where you're like, I know what this looks like in Europe. Now we get to see what could this possibly look like in MLS. And we're already seeing that coming good right away. As far as it relates to the team, I think Caleb Porter deserves a lot of credit. You know, we criticized him, I think fairly so, for his comments when Jossie was gone. But at the same time, we're seeing that they had another level, another gear in their team. And that has now come good with this player bringing into the mix, because it had looked pretty predictable at times. It looked plodding, slow. And now Cucho has come in and really energized it with, he's had a lot more to his game than I had seen previously. I mean, I'd seen his incredible finishes in the box and scored against, you know, some big clubs in the past, but his ability to help create space for others, his ability to find passes and connect, you know, at times I'd even looked at Zelarayan and said he looked more of like a solo player at times, like he didn't really combine well with others. Now those two look to be building a nice relationship. So I've seen a lot of what I've seen so far, it's he's really connected this dots to think that, like, yeah, they could really push with that schedule as well towards the back half of the season. Kind of the way we've seen, like, Rui Diaz when he came in with Seattle and, like, you know, took them to another level and immediately kind of hit the ground running. That's the type of expectations or impact I think you can expect.
Yeah, I agree with Kalen.
In the playoffs right now, 29 points, yeah, by the way.
I agree with Kalen, though. He has shown a ton to his game outside of just being a finisher. He seems open to covering different parts of the field. His connection with Zellerion is quick. Zellerion's picking his head up early, looking for through balls, trying to clip balls over the top to him, rather than just trying to create in the final third once they've already progressed as a team, which has been such a huge part of Columbus's issue, is they don't take advantage in transition and then it becomes plodding and slow and they sort of have to pick away. I don't think it... Listen, Cucho Hernandez, obviously, record signing, big money. That's most of what's going on. But I don't think it's a coincidence that Aiden Morris is back and healthy and he's been in the starting lineup every one of these games. He's special and he does things that no one else in this team does in both sides of the ball. And I think with Zellerion and Cucho now being a part of the attack and Morris starting to be able to play alongside Nagby, push up and find interesting moments to become a part of the attack, I think that's a really big plus for this team as well. I don't think they're the team I thought they were last year. Defensively, they're just not as clean 1v1 defending as they could be. And so they need to use, and if they use a lot of their pieces to get involved in the attack, when they turn the ball over, they look exposed, they look open, but they are still better than what we've seen over the last 12 months, which was not a playoff team.
They're above.
He's 23 Cincinnati. Years old. Is that right?
Yeah, that was fair. Going on in the chat. This is always a challenge for Dave. Yeah. Try to put your finger on it. Paul asks this, vibe check on Cincinnati, Doyle, going to miss the playoffs unless they make a Miazga-level signing, right? Or does Lucho's return let them limp to a low seed?
I mean, it's insane to try to predict anything in the playoff race right now. I got the standings page open. Between 1.1 points per game and like 1.4 points per game, there's 8 teams in the Eastern Conference. It's just like they could get hot. They could do it at Miazga level. Center back signing would certainly help. I think they need fullback help as well. Getting Matarita back will be good for them. But they're like, they have a shot, just like every other team in that mix has a shot. They just got to get their mojo back a little bit. Lucho would help. But like, I would struggle to bet on any of those teams in the mix to make it or to miss it.
There's literally not a team in the East that I would definitively put money or something significant in my life on the table and say they have no chance. That's just period. They won't make the playoffs. DC's only played 19 games. They're spoon holders right now, but they have two open DP spots. Wayne Rooney came and they were in last place in the East. And they made the playoffs. They don't have Wayne Rooney to sign as a player. Let's be clear about that.
Lings. Like,
it's going to be silly down the stretch. And Cincinnati has every chance. In the past, they didn't have a chance. So that's a pretty good vibe check on them. Nashville 1, LAFC 2. We're almost 40 minutes into the show, people, and we haven't even... We maybe said Gareth Bale two or three times just in reference. Giorgio Chiellini starts for LAFC on the road. He plays 60 minutes. I know Dave loved the Eddie Segura, you know, forehead kiss on the way out. I mean, that's just a special moment. He truly understands what's happening at the club. Eddie coming back from injury, of course. This is his third appearance. We get 60 minutes there. Gareth Bale comes off the bench for 20 minutes. Both comment on how hot it was in Nashville. I do believe it was like 91 or 90 plus in, you know, in the dark. The darkness
what
of
was
night.
That what was but, it in KC at the same time because that's where they
not that
next
hot
week. Okay,
I know, but it's super hot this week is a good week in Kansas City because it's only over 100 on the highs three times, so that tells you sort of where we're at. And they go to Texas
three times
to all three cities in Texas in late August and September, and it's notoriously
They say it's balmy nowadays.
A Mediterranean climate there in Texas at that time of year. Very cool winds coming
it's
in.
It's basically like just, playing you know, in Nice. That's
right,
the best.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. So let's get the thoughts on Chiellini. Anybody have thoughts on Chiellini's hour? Big win for LAFC on the road as well. Nashville still look a little punchless.
He was fine. He's not going to win many foot races. And he came out and said afterwards, wow, they counterattack a lot. Here, so I think it just reaffirms what I thought about this signing, which is they're gonna have to be smart about who they use him against and how they play, when they have him out there, because if they're, you know, if you're going against a Sounders team in the playoff that's going to counterattack you to death, I don't know if Chiellini's the right guy. But I thought he looked good. He looked bought in. And for the most part, he looked fit. And then they subbed him off at the right spot.
Weeby, you said you wouldn't bet on anything in the Eastern Conference. So here's one. 1.5 over under that Chiellini plays 90 minutes in an MLS regular season game this year.
Oh, I'll go over easily.
No over chance.
I'll go over easily.
Five subs per game. They've got 97 center backs. No chance. All right, there you go.
All right, that's what there you gave me. I mean, 1.5 is a charitable.
It is a charitable one. I was going to do 0.5. So I'm glad I did.
Oh, wow. I thought you were handing it to me at 1.5. Yeah. Hey, Gareth Bale, did you see he had a nice touch to start? I don't know if anybody saw that. Wow. Anybody on social media or a little pullback back heel? Just making sure, in case you hadn't seen that at MLS, might have seen it there on any number of on Twitter accounts.
Sky Sports.
Yeah, Sky Sports. What'd you tell Sky Sports about the Gareth Bale debut this morning, Kalen?
I think there was obviously a lot of eyes and excitement on it, and they'll pick up kind of anything that he's doing right now and trying to keep an eye on it. I mean, it was funny because I mentioned like his preparation for playing in the World Cup in Qatar and the heat and humidity that Chiellini and Bale had both mentioned, but right now there's like a record heat wave in the UK, so that point didn't really stand as well as if he would have been playing over there. Although, but yeah, I mean, there wasn't a ton for me as far as like incredible debuts of the past when we think of like star players who've come on and, you know, come off the bench with, you know, nobody will ever really live up to what we saw in El Trafico with Zlatan. So, but yeah, I think the plan was to get 160 and the other 20. And that's just how you start building your way into a team, and coming in this late in the season is difficult. And both guys, I thought, look at least fit. And, you know, to come off the bench and have at least be sharp was good. He didn't seem to really, he kind of Bale moved around a little bit, where I think he started on the right hand side. Towards the end, he had to make a couple track back runs to get back defensively on the left, which I think probably raised some eyebrows, at least from my perspective when I was watching it, to be like, is this what he wants to do? Is this something he's going to do? This is day one, but how does LAFC kind of find a way to protect him from having to do that as much? We didn't see him in the middle of the pitch, which is something that Charlie Davies and I had talked about at a certain point, as like if he was going to maybe take the nine position. Even when Arango came out, I think it looked like they moved Vela towards the nine spot. So it seems like they want to use him a little bit more on the wing. So I think there's still some work to be done to figure out where he fits best, even in a role where he's coming off the bench to begin with. But yeah, we didn't get to see that opportunity I think you guys mentioned it, Segura. I don't know, who was it? Took the shot?
He stole it from him.
or like a really...
Well, he got kissed on the head by Giorgio. Like, he's blessed. He's got to go for it after that.
You're feeling yourself there. Yeah. But I think just like there's still a lot more to be done. So for me, it was just kind of like a nice entrance, get him going. But and obviously the intrigue of like, what does this look like? But I think there's still more questions than answers as far as how these pieces all fit.
What does it look like, Doyle, to you, and what should it look like? And what did you make of Michele Giannone's reporting on sort of Chirundolo's comments on Chicho Arango in a game that Chicho scored, but Chirundolo going back to defensive work rate and how it wasn't there, then it was there, and it wasn't there in this game, but then Chicho gets a really nice Chicho goal and has scored like 6 and 7. I mean, there seems to be something to work out with this front three.
There does. Chicho Arango, I get what... I get what Chirundolo's concern is in terms of defending from the front. Like, you can't be a pressing team if you don't have good defenders from the front. But like, Carlos Vela is not a good defender from the front anymore. Gareth Bale is, that's never really been his strong suit. So if you go 0-for-3, then that's not great. You end up getting stretched out. Your midfield has to come way up. That exposes center backs, and suddenly you're dealing with gaps all over the field. I think that's what he's afraid of. The solution, which is, it seems to be to play Vela as a false nine, and then have Bale on one side, and then presumably Brian Rodriguez, who they still rate, on the other side, sort of crashing in from the wings. I think that's a very imperfect solution, because I don't think Vela works particularly well as a false nine. I think he drops back so deep that he actually clogs the midfield and ends up taking the ball off the foot of guys like Kellen Acosta and Jose Cifuentes, who are really good at both playing in tight spaces, but also at making the field big, you know, making it, stretching it both, you know, laterally and vertically in order to put your attackers into spots where they can go one-on-one and beat a guy, or where they can just find space. So I think what we're going to see, and what we did see for the final 20 minutes last night, was a team that was kind of muddled, and you know, your two best players are kind of trying to occupy the same spaces, and like stuff doesn't fit intuitively. They have a lot of talent. They'll be able to brute force some wins, but this is not going to be a plug and play type of thing like Cucho was in Columbus. Like, he instantly elevated not just the attack, but the entire team, because they could play on the front foot more. With this, it's like, as great as Gareth Bale is, because the pieces don't fit together up top, I expect it to be pretty rocky for a few weeks, maybe even through the end of the regular season at least. But the thing to remember is that they didn't bring in Chiellini and Bale to win a supporter shield. They brought him in to win MLS Cup. So as long as they're playing well and have it figured out come October, they'll be fine with a few rocky weeks, or even, you know, two rocky months right now.
I've got a remedy for rocky or disjointed attacking play. Sporting KC's back line, come on down in Kansas City next week, and we'll see how that goes. Shaq Moore to Nashville reportedly done. Dave, how you like that one?
It's
crosses in from the right side. Here they come.
Yeah, it's been one of their bigger weaknesses in the team. Obviously, they lost Alistair Johnston, hadn't actually replaced him, and now you bring in a guy who, one, gives you the flexibility to either play four or five in the back, and he'll be out there in both setups, where with Mweel, you're sort of shifting depending on what you're playing along the back, and a better defensive option than all of those guys combined. And then, as you said, start to get more crosses in, which maybe makes Sapong, or now Teal Bunbury, getting a bunch of minutes again, back from injury, and Zubac somewhere on the bench. Maybe it makes those guys more effective rather than just relying on Hani Mukhtar and his creativity and him finding openings alone 100%. This isn't a team. I don't think this is a move that elevates them into a different space, but it makes them better at the things they already do, which they've struggled at over the last few weeks, especially at home.
Copa Tejas.
Oh, go ahead. Smart move. I was just going to say, a smart move for Moore, I think, just with his eyes on the World Cup. We've seen Yedlin come back and do really well with Miami, and that's kind of pushed him forward. So I think Moore coming into a system that I think suits him, that is going to give him opportunities to play week in, week out in front of the audience. And then, you know, I think they really do need that width to be getting forward, because sometimes when they, especially on when they try and attack, often it's with Hani and CJ and the two of them. And if they don't, if that works really well when they turn the ball over and they get it and those two get into open space. But if it's going against a lower block, they need to use the width a little bit better. And we've seen them in the past do that with Johnson, and now they have that option again on the right-hand side.
On Climate Watch, I think I'm going to go Canary Islands over Nashville, but you know, that's more of a David Goss topic to dig into on a different podcast. Copa Tejas, FC Dallas, Austin, 1-1. We talked about it. Great celebrations for Austin in the parking lot. Diego Fagundes with a goal here. I want to say this is like the first open play goal for Dallas in like, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months. I don't know, it's seven straight without a win for FC Dallas.
First open play goal at home.
Yeah, it was at home. They scored last week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I had forgotten about the Copa Tejas late one from Jesus. But anyway, at home, either way, they haven't won in seven. They are now hovering around the playoff line with the LA Galaxy. And that's not good. Any thoughts on Dallas? I mean, I think we've done Austin a We've done our service to the Verde and Black.
I haven't seen at any point this season a belief that Jose Martinez is a high-level MLS center back. Hedges still is, but not even for 90 minutes every game, and not every game. And I think Tafari's taken a step back at best. So that, to me, is the biggest fear with this Dallas team, less the attack and more individually defensively, and then they're starting Tumwasi a ton and Marco Farfan still out injured. So Paas had to be big early in this game. And Dallas, I thought, strung together some good segments of play, but I don't know that's not a winning formula in MLS.
All right, let's talk Philadelphia Union Revs. I'll just read some mail on the Revs, and we'll focus on Philly for a second here, Doyle. Mark Othot says, the Revs are making me sad. I like Kessler and Farrell, but they're not it right now. I want Altidore and Gonzalez gone. Petrovic, Barrero, and the Academy are giving me hope, though. Excited to be Veroni soon. Hoping to make the playoffs after having the most points ever is straight up wild. Tom Bogert also dropped the points dropped from winning positions in MLS this season. We know last year that the Revs were just, they had a stranglehold on leads and on close games. Well, this year they're 28th in points dropped from winning positions. They did it again this weekend, 3 points dropped to take them to 24 points dropped on the season. Speaking of FC Dallas, they have 15 points dropped. And that goes to what Dave was talking about. And at the top of that list, 0 points dropped for LAFC, which explains why they're on the lead in the shield. How about Philly in this game? 2-1. We have Gemini Time saying Ura now at 6 goals in under 750 minutes, and the Union top three being one of the top goal scoring trios. Are we starting to see an understanding develop between the three that can make them a dangerous attack? We have James Porter asking about McGlynn, his left foot, and his development. And everybody's saying, see you in the playoffs. What do you see from Philly right now?
I like the way that Jim's using the roster, even when you just look at the lineup, because Ura came off the bench in this one. And Aronson and McGlynn go from the start. And I think they talked about it during the U20 qualification where they went there, and I think there was like 3 or 4 guys that got pulled away. And then they were saying, okay, yeah, we can move on from Sergio Santos because we're going to start playing these guys, you know, as the Philly way from the academy. And I thought both of them had good matches and are going to still be able to like continue to grow. I love the way McGlynn is able to kind of sit deep, find balls, distribute. You know, there was a long stretches, especially in the beginning of the game, where it looked like New England had sat back pretty deep and were just creating like a very deep block of like their midfield was sitting really far back, and McGlynn and some of the guys were just looking to stretch them out by shooting from distance. And eventually things softened up a little bit and they were able to get some set pieces and apply some pressure. But I like the way that Jim is using their roster. I think you look at some of the teams right now across the league and teams are looking worn out across the board in a lot of cases. And I think the idea that you're going to use this time to really develop the young players through the first part of the season, they get some meaningful minutes, but now's their kind of chance to really take a bigger step forward, makes a ton of sense as you look at like, what's the word, like periodization of like a season and how you kind of build. And when you look at their place in the table, that makes a lot of sense. We've seen Philly do this again in the past as well in their Supporter Shield winning season as well.
All right, I'm gonna go Inter Miami, Charlotte. That's some good stuff there, Kalen. 3-2 Inter Miami. They're down 2-0 in the first half to Charlotte. Jordi Reyna, the second goal in particular, just absolute filth. Ray Hudson had himself a field day with that finish. Just loved it. I mean, dozens of roses tied to feed, and you know, belly dancers on surfboards. And I guess that was the Taylor goal, but he was on one in this game. Gonzalo Higuain, second straight game with a goal. Doyle, I know you can really identify. Just a beautiful finish, like vintage Gonzalo stuff, like Napoli, Juve, first touch, diagonal run, perfect finish across his body, the balance, the power, the footwork, just everything about it, absolutely great. And you mentioned the playoff implications in that entire segment of the Eastern Conference. Well, these are teams right around that playoff line, currently below it. What did you see from Miami, and what have you seen from Phil Neville? I mean, it feels like sort of our complaints about who they were and what Phil was building have dissipated a good bit.
No, they have. Since he benched Higuain back in early April, this team is 7 wins, 5 losses, 3 draws, which is a playoff pace. And I think right now they're, what, 2 points below the playoff line in the Eastern Conference?
Yep, just behind.
So they're in a really good spot. They've played a lot better. The big thing with this team, once they put Higuain on the bench, was like they had an ethos, and it was everybody works and everybody runs, right? There were no luxury players in that 11. And so for a good chunk of time, if they weren't able to run you into the ground, they weren't really able to create all that much. They were lacking a little bit of magic. And I think what happened with the Pozuelo acquisition was they felt, you know, good enough about their foundation that they were willing to bring in a guy who's really not going to add anything to you defensively. He's actually going to take some stuff off the table defensively. And they're willing to make that sacrifice because of the solidity of the rest of the team, that it's worth it to have a magical number 10. The first half, that was not a good bet because Pozuelo was absolutely terrible in the first half of this game. Second half, he was really good. I thought he was actually very good in the second half, though he wasn't the one who made the difference. It was that bench mob. It was, you know, Gonzalo Higuain, who now has 2 goals in 2 games in his last 2 games coming off the bench. He's only started one time since April. He could have hung it up and said, all right, that's fine. I'll just collect a paycheck for the rest of the year and then be done. But like, he clearly has to some level bought into a bench role. So he came on at the hour mark. Emerson Rodriguez, who got the game-winning goal, he came on about the hour mark as well. And then Bryce Duke, who, as you mentioned, is going to lose playing time to Pozuelo, he came on as well. And all three of those guys were just massive. All three of those guys changed the game. And, you know, with Higuain, it's obvious. Like, he has that level of skill. If he's going to go empty the tank for 30, 35 minutes every week, that's fantastic. Like, that is such a game-changer that you have. And, you know, credit to him and to Phil Neville for buying in on that. With Emerson, he's a young winger. You don't know really what you're going to get. But Bryce Duke, part of the reason they were able to start winning back in April is, like, Bryce Duke came into that midfield and was able to do, like, Latif Blessing-style stuff. He didn't do it at the level that Latif did it at in 2019 and into 2020, but just in terms of getting pressure to basically everyone on the other team everywhere, having enough awareness and skill when you that pressure leads to a turnover to play good passes, you know, not often defense splitting passes like we saw in the game winner, but like passes that are functional and move the entire team into a better spot where they can put the opponent, you know, make the opponents turn and run at their goal, like simple stuff like that. And it's all kind of come together. This is not the best team in the league by any stretch. Even if Pozuelo returns to his MVP form, they're not going to be the best team in the league. But they can be really good. And the reason is because they have an identity. They have an ethos. They have a locker room that seems to have bought into it, including the DP who got benched for 3 months. And you don't see that a lot in MLS. And I think it bodes well for the stretch run.
The other thing that'll be interesting to watch, just the other piece of this, was at halftime, bringing Christian V into center back and bringing Gibbs in, which allows Bryce Duke to come off the wing. And he pretty much played centrally the whole time because Gibbs gives width, which McPhee doesn't. So I'll be interested to see how Phil Neville handles that back line. And if Duke does become a starter and, you know, whoever's playing out on the left is pinching in, can Gibbs play those minutes? And if not, can McPhee give you that? And if not, is there another piece out there? But that was a really big move from him at halftime as well.
They were down 2-0, needed to make a move, came back 3-2 winners. Minnesota United basically just dominated DC United in a battle of Uniteds in Minnesota. Wesper Dine basically said we had to spend 30 minutes on this game. And I'll apologize in person, Wes, at Blackheart on the Sunday before All-Star, 7 p.m. Eastern, or not Eastern, 7 p.m. local, so that's Central Time. Seems to be when we're going to do the live show there. We're working on getting the budget together for some complimentary beverages for all those who want to come and hang out and listen to the show as we talk about the weekend and sort of transition things into All-Star Week as well. We'll get you more details on that in the coming days. Emmanuel Reynoso, 2 goals. He is the hottest player in the league, arguably. I mean, it's like 7-2 since the international break. Minnesota unbeaten in 5, 4 straight wins. This feels to me like, Minnesota's like trying to time these runs. Like, this is what it was in the playoffs. Like, when they get Reynoso in a place where he's absolutely on, he amplifies everybody around them. It sort of feels to me like Robin Ludd behind him is now sort of the Kevin Molino, but who does more, if that makes sense, that can sort of amplify it around and make it easier for Reynoso to be in these positions. But when he's feeling it like this, this is what that 4-2-3-1 is about. It's about giving him freedom, about the ability to find space, get on the turn. And once he does that, he's so good that either creates chances or finds areas of the pitch where he can be goal dangerous. And when he's in those spots, he's just completely lethal. But I just don't know if that's sustainable for an entire season. Can Reynoso be at this level for 34 games and into the playoffs? I think we've already seen that no, probably not. But when he is, they're really, really hard to beat.
He's never done this before, by the way. He's got 9 goals this year. That's more than his first 2 years in MLS combined with the playoffs. Like, this is different for him. So, yeah, the question if he can sustain it, I think, is reasonable. But it's been fascinating to watch, and the way him and Amarillo have connected up top and how high he has sat both, you know, when they're defending and in possession has been really interesting. And I didn't know Robin Lud could play center mid. That was not a thing I knew.
To me, that's the Lud effect, right?
Yeah, but he...
Like, he can rely on a dude to move the ball and to see him in the positions he needs to get to advance the ball without him.
He's now played center forward, wing, and center mid at a high level for Minnesota United. That's a pretty reliable signing.
Let's talk on the DC side real quick. And Anders is laughing in the chat about me now speeding things up. Again, I know my team, Anders. Stephen Goff reporting that Julian Gressel was traded to the Vancouver Whitecaps last week after we recorded. $900K in general allocation money. Probably the first of a few moves. Julian Gressel, not happy about that. He didn't have an inkling he was being shopped. He found out basically as everybody at the facility was finding out via the tweets. His wife found out before he was able to talk to his wife. You can go read Pablo Maurer's article at The Athletic with comments from Julian, which I think is a pretty illuminating article. Julian not happy, sort of airing some things out about the direction of the club or lack thereof and how he felt like that move went down. The reasoning here is that DC is going to eliminate the wingback. So, you know, Vancouver have them, and Julian Gressel, one of the best crossers in the league, one of the best wingbacks in the entire league, has been for a while now. So it makes sense he holds value for the Whitecaps, but going to the 4-2-3-1 that works so well within the Lucharoo era. Is Rooney go to that point? There's also talk of Ravel Morrison visiting DC this weekend on TAM. Well, you just opened up a TAM and senior roster spot by trading Gressel. Maybe Ravel Morrison is a replacement there. And then this morning, Tom Bogert reported that, according to sources and many other have confirmed now, that Miguel Berry from the Crew to DC is going down 225 in GAM to add to their just squadron of center forwards. So what, you have Nigel Roberta, you have Ola Kamara, you have Michael Estrada, now you have Miguel Berry. Doyle, what do you think's going on in DC, and does it all make sense?
I mean, it looks like a 4-4-2 team, right? With all those center forwards. I think Taxi's best position is probably as like a second forward in a 4-4-2, more than like a Reynoso style playmaker in a 4-2-3-1. So getting Barry at that number makes a ton of sense, especially because Ola's older and you don't know how much longer he's got. And
last year contract too, I believe.
Yeah, last year contract, and then Estrada's on loan and he hasn't been great, and Roberta hasn't been great. So like, yeah, it seems to be heading in that direction. But the thing with DC is every time they take the field, they're out talented. Almost never do they have more talent than the team they're lining up against. And I think that what we're really seeing here is the first stages of a complete roster overhaul. And I'm not sure that that's the wrong idea.
It does go back to the identity side. What is it? We've said it for a long time. You know, they were saying we want to be high press, very direct. Then you go get Rooney. I'm sure part of the deal with him is like you're gonna build in his vision, man.
It's such a behind the times decision to play like that, because like people have been doing high pressing, super direct stuff in this league since, I mean, Peter Vermes was the first back in 2010, but the Red Bulls really brought it to the fore in 2015. And like, teams are smarter about it now. They're press resistant. They understand how to play out of that. So if you're tossing everything into that hat in 2022. It's not the money ball way to win anymore. It just isn't. I hope they have some clarity in what their direction is. And if you read that story by Pablo in The Athletic, it causes some real concern that maybe they don't.
Well, the flip side of the clarity is how long is Wayne going to be there? What if he, you know, he may have the idea that it's going to be XYZ, but if an offer comes in that is the next step that he needs to take in his career, I mean, there's just a lot to break down in that DC making some moves. We'll see if they work out for them. Gressel, the Whitecaps seems like a good move. Whitecaps go to Portland, draw 1-1.
Brian White, Brian White had to have been stoked when he heard the Gressel news, and then Raposo plays in that ball, and it has been the best week of 2022 for Brian White. He is living life, and he's living large. Him and Cavallini with Gressel, the way he plays, I mean, he might be the highest usage player on that team once he gets there, down that right wing, and it seems like a lot of it fits together. Blackman's been okay, hasn't been great, and gives up the penalty in this one, but the ball from Raposo, obviously the left side, but that's what you're hoping to start seeing from Gressel, time in and time out down that right wing. And it now maybe frees up how do you use Dahomey, who is Kubas's partner. Man, I would love, no offense, to not have to tune into a Russell tiebreak game every week, but not my decision.
I left the tweet out of here. I didn't think we would get to it, but you just did, from a Caps fan saying, do we have to hit the Russell tiebreak?
At least Baldissimo got minutes this time, and he's not with Whitecaps 2 anymore, so hopefully he's finding his
way. But with the way he played in this game, I'm not sure he's going to be getting many more minutes.
But on this note, 2222 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor goes to Isaac Bomer, the Caps goalkeeper. And, you know, they had Maxime Crépeau and they traded him. And apparently they just had a squad of like U23 goalkeepers just hanging out, just ready for action. They've got Thomas Hassall. They've gone through a bunch of different guys. It was Isaac Bomer in this case, had a nice game. For Vancouver, let's
he
go.
Had a huge game. I mean, he had a couple of saves in the second half that were, and shout out to the Ivasic on the other side. Like his save, this double save off the Caps kickoff for the second half. The Caps are one of the few teams that run like scripted plays off the second half kickoff, and this one was absolutely spectacular. Ended up with White getting a look from 6 yards out, and then the follow up, you know, the rebound fell to him, and he put it right on Gault's foot from like 4 yards out, and Ivasic saved both of those. He has been really, really good for this Portland team.
Speaking of great saves, Pedro Gallese robbing Dom Dwyer was, good Lord, one of the best saves I've ever seen. And Dom Dwyer's face said a lot on that one. Atlanta won, Orlando won. You got a flip side of the goalkeeping, Atlanta, Rocco Rios Novo, hanging out on his post, man. When the referee blows the whistle, Rocco.
Are we going to make a big deal out of this? Like, he clearly didn't hear the whistle.
Yeah, did anyone hear it? I obviously were watching on TV. Has anyone gone back?
I mean, it's not just a whistle. There's also the referee makes the arm motion to say ball in play.
Yeah, I think it's like, obviously it's a giant mistake. I think it's a reasonable explanation to say like he just missed it. And like that kind of. It can happen.
The one thing
we've seen it happen to veterans.
That's the one thing, though, is
it's still a big mistake.
His mental clock at some point has to be like,
yes,
you're playing at this level. You got to get back in goal. You don't get 15 minutes to set up your wall.
I'm not burying the dude. I'm just saying it is a pretty significant mistake at home that you go down 1-0 on. Now, Atlanta just poured it on in the second half. Joseph Martinez banging posts. Obviously, Pedro Gallese doing his thing. There is some news here. From Tom, once again, Tommy Scoops, if you're not following him, at Tom Bogart on Twitter. Orlando City finalizing the acquisition of Nico Giacchini from France, free transfer, and the French club will retain a sell-on percentage. Giacchini turns 22 this week. We've seen him with the USMNT. This was like a smart signing for Orlando City.
I would agree.
I think he scored a couple goals with the national team.
Yeah.
The best part of it, you know, is the free transfer part. So to be able to get a player, you know, for nothing is really good scouting or good business to be able to get out there and get him. So I think Orlando has needed a little bit extra up top. And so you add this guy to the front line, you know, it's going to be very motivated, young, still young, ton of potential, still hasn't reached his top form yet. Just makes a ton of sense.
At what point did they go to up top? I mean, everyone is a center forward outside of Facundo Torres on that roster. So now they have Tesho, they have Cara, and they have Giacchini, who we've seen him play on the wing, but I don't think it's his natural position at all. But I agree with Kalen that if this talent is out there and available for what it sounds like, you just go and get it done.
We didn't mention this. Darren Eales off to Newcastle.
Nukes, baby. Go Toons. Toon Army. That's the most I know about Newcastle. Like an
opportune time to make the jump.
Yeah, we talked about it for a while on MLS Today. So if you want to go listen, just search on any of your podcast apps or Spotify.
That's a good shot.
MLS Today. But we talked about it for a while and I came away. I'll tell you most of what I said, which is I think it's a win-win-win. I think he gets out at a time when his stock is still at a high, and as it should be, because as much as we're going to talk on the field, off the field, they have been one of the, they have been a historic success in Major League Soccer. The relevance that club has in that size of a market, the way they've set themselves up, all of that. I think for the club, it's probably time to change some things. And this is a very easy way to do it. And then you also now can look around for Atlanta United and say, our former executive now runs a Premier League team. And I think it puts you in a stratosphere globally that's a little bit different as well. So I think it's positive for everyone around. Maybe not for Carlos Bocanegra. I don't know what his future will be. But I think in general around Atlanta United, this is a really good move and a really good moment. And I guess congrats to him as well for stepping up to now being the chief executive at a giant Premier League team.
Yeah, seemed like that was the goal all along. But Atlanta do have some work to do as far as on-field performances. So do the Sounders, Anders. Three straight losses. Don't know if you know. We'll go to Chicago and lose 1-0? Oh, not good. Not good. John Duran out for this one. He had an ankle issue. We didn't get to see the 18-year-old fall up his brace. But, yeah. Alexis Ray says, Chicago Fire FC, the most WTF team in MLS. Discuss. Also, should we be worried about the Sounders, Doyle?
Which one do you want me to take?
I don't know. This. I forget the Sounders. Chicago Fire. What the heck?
Yeah. I don't know that this is a case of any massive adjustments from Ezra Hendrickson. Like, it's still the same guys. They've just stopped making absolutely tragic mistakes and then gotten a little bit better play from the guys in the attack. Chris Mueller, Brian Gutierrez has been really good. I know he could have scored a couple goals this weekend, but even without that, he's been really good. Duran obviously had a nice game. Midweek in the win over Toronto. So just getting some good performances and not stepping on rakes in defense is a path toward respectability. And, you know, last week at this time, I thought their season was over. After the way they collapsed against the Crew in the second half, you know, up 2-0 at home, lose 3-2 and like really just kind of lay down and die. They bounced back with 6 points. They're 4 points below the playoff line in the Eastern Conference. I don't think they're going to make it, but like I said 4 hours ago on the show, like you're absolutely insane if you have like rock solid takes on any of these teams in sort of the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference. And that applies to the West as well.
Joe Mansueto, the owner. I admit much of the season has been frustrating. I don't think anyone is happy with where we are in the standings, but I feel like we're starting to hit our stride. Our place in the standings doesn't reflect the size of the payroll, but I would point out the season's not over. Let the season play out. We still have 13 games. There's still a lot of season to go. The story's not over yet for this year. I'm still optimistic we'll make the playoffs. And he says he's a fan of George Heitz's and gives him a vote of confidence. Mentioned some signings he got right. John Duran, Chihos, Federico Navarro, Chris Mueller, Jairo Torres. All those are good. I would point out the DPs haven't worked out very well. And yeah, we'll see what happens for the Fire the rest of the way. Still hoping I take that Malort shot. To wrap up the Sounders' suspicious look, will MLS Media finally admit that the Sounders aren't that good this year? Sergeant Pickles, I'm stealing this comment from another Sounders fan, he says, but in addition to Rui Diaz being out, they still feel like they have a Jao Paulo-sized hole in the midfield, and I'm unsure it will improve. Three straight losses for the Sounders. Galaxy lose, Rapids win, Jesse gets a goal, 2-0 Rapids at home. They needed that one. LA are sort of in the Dallas zone, which is there's a little bit of a free fall going on. Two draws and one in the last three for Colorado. All those came after trading Mark Anthony Kay. So we have a Rapids fan asking whether trading Mark Anthony Kay was a good thing. And just rinse and repeat from JDB. Has Jonathan Lewis turned the corner? He's starting and finishing games lately. It's the Jonathan Lewis conversation. Maybe we'll get to that at a different date. But a big win for the Rapids. Big win for RSL at home against Sporting Kansas City. Look, Jefferson Savarino's good. They're good when Justin Glad plays. I don't want Salt Lake fans to think that I discount Justin Glad at all, even though I didn't think he should be in the All-Star game. But we have the chorus from Kansas City. Sporting Happy Rock Casuals, Sporting KC should just go in on the Open Cup and write off MLS this year. Andre Garave, what would be the implications of a U.S. Open Cup win and wooden spoon double for Kansas City?
Ooh, DC United 2013.
I know, that's where we're at. It's about, what, about 10 days until the semifinals of the Open Cup? And maybe Sporting Kansas City could host the final. So it certainly feels like Kansas City are kaput in the league. And we'll see what happens in the Open Cup. Maybe I'll be sticking around here for the live show we are going to do. And the final result here is San Jose 1, Houston 2. San Jose go up, Houston come back. Hector Herrera makes his first start. San Jose Earthquakes Q74 asks if San Jose fans should be mad they're not linked to any new players. And Old Quakes fan says he's been a Quakes fan his entire life. Donovan is part of the lawless cadre that betrayed our club. If Donovan becomes our manager, I will never watch another game. I am not alone in this opinion. What do you think about that, Kalen?
I kind of respect the pettiness on one level, just because it's like I was around the Bay Area when Landon was like winning titles and all that, which was amazing. But then, you know, yeah, to go to the Galaxy and then see the success. Look, I'm bitter about it too, so I understand from a Quakes fan perspective. That said, I think Landon has proven to have a lot of success so far with San Diego Loyal. I think coming in and imparting his wisdom to this club would be an interesting hire. So I would definitely not write off any manager that like comes to your club. I don't think, especially one with the history of bringing titles to your club. So I'd probably say I respect the pettiness, but I'd probably try to work through that at some point. And if you haven't given up on
three, yeah, like, right. If you're still there
by yeah. now, like, you can make it a little longer. You know, keep going.
Like, don't give up now. Don't give up now. It's not as you have the team. You have the team. It's important. All right. That's it for us.
Can I just throw out a name for that though? I don't think it's going to be Landon. I think it's going to be Lucci. I think Lucci ends up with that San Jose job.
Oh, okay. After the World Cup, we'll have to wait and see as to what happens.
He was drafted by the San Jose Earthquakes, I believe, out of SMU. So there's some history there. It's a deep
cut. Which also for the fan is, by the way, you don't see big names connected, I think. Let your manager choose the players and sort of assist, not assist them, but more of that rather than enforcing it on them. And that's kind of why San Jose's in a holding pattern in terms of the big signings right now.
We talked about the Eastern Conference and the pileup. In the Western Conference, from Minnesota, let's just say at 4, down to San Jose, it's a 9-point gap. It's basically 1.1 to 1.48, just like the East. I mean, it is absolutely just jammed together in the middle of these conferences, and we're going to see over the course of the late summer into the fall who gets into those top 7 spots, competes for MLS Cup. That's it for us, as always.
Wait. No, that's not it, because we have one more update, because we spent 40 minutes saying goodbye to Tati Castellanos. Reporting out now... Oh, is that gosh. This was not his final game. He's actually going to play.
Oh, no, but he hugs people. People hug.
Come on. What are you hugging people for?
Awkward. Come on. This is awkward.
Keep the hugs behind closed doors.
Did we do a good job of keeping it to 5 minutes a game? I feel like we did. I mean, five minutes, exactly.
I could have used a little longer with my Dynamo towards the end. Come on, we rushed through.
We got time here. You want to throw it in there? I'm willing to give it to you.
No, the only thing I would say is like, the pressure, they've been able to get some nice turnovers and apply some pressure to, I mean, San Jose didn't do themselves any favors with their passing out of the back, but yeah, I was impressed by that. And then the only thing I would add is I think Wando got a yellow card in this one from the bench. it's a rivalry match, Houston, San Jose, Wando got a yellow card on the bench. Like, we had to mention that an extra time.
That's the perfect end of this show. As always, if you want us to talk about something, we mixed a bunch of mail into this show. I put a tweet out on Mondays and Thursdays before we make the rundown, and we will drop you in there. That's it for us. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Have a great week. Adios.